The date is July 12th, 1985, and we're watching Explorers. Welcome to I Used to Like This One. Sorry, for a brief second, I can remember if it's Explorers or the
Explorers. I've always said the Explorers, but there is no the. It's just Explorers. No, it's the. Cleaner.
It's thoughtless. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Wolfgang Mueller to my Ben Crandall.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
Oh boy, and this week I am thrilled to bring back a guest that is simultaneously on some of our worst downloaded episodes and our number one downloaded episode, which is our 100th Superman 3 episode. Please welcome back to our show, Mr. Michael Ross.
I guess that makes me the Darren of the trio?
You're the Darren.
All right, I'll take it. Right off the bat, obviously, tragedy. River Phoenix died at a young age. There's nothing more tragic than that. But slightly less tragic is the fact that the kid who played Darren did not go on to big things, because he might be the best actor of the three in this movie.
He was pretty incredible, and I was stunned to see that he had no filmography as well.
Yeah. Almost nothing, yeah.
Well, this week we are looking back at July 1985 when the movies in theaters were Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, Red Sonja, Silverado, a little movie called Back to the Future, and of course our movie for today, Explorers, which earned $9.87 million on a $25 million budget.
Not good.
For contrast, Back to the Future made $388 million. So, poor
There's no accounting for taste.
Well, this movie is almost exactly 1 year older than me, so if you haven't seen it, which, to be honest, I had not either, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, well, I've found four. Mm. The first is, from the director of Gremlins and Inner Space.
Yeah. That's not a... Sure. That's not really a tagline. That's like a...
It's just like a fact.
A fact. Yeah. Number two, the adventure begins in your own backyard.
All right, yeah. That's fine.
I like that one.
But, and we did learn a few weeks ago that it's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids that is the greatest backyard adventure of all time. So, okay. They took it one step further with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Yeah, a few years later.
So that one with the adventure stays in your own backyard. This one started there.
It only started there. Yeah, the dreams happen there. Well, number three, someone out there is calling us.
That sounds like a horror. It's like the Scream tagline.
Oh, it does end in an ellipsis, so that Ooh. Helps your case there. Well, number four, you don't need a driver's license to reach the stars.
I don't like that one either.
Yeah.
Well, where we're going, you don't need roads. It's already taken.
Yeah, well, I guess so. Yeah. Well, it obviously was. Yeah. I mean, I'll take a crack at my own. How about the real adventure is the friends we made along the way?
Made
how
along
about
the that? Way. Yeah.
But those may not be very good descriptions of this movie. So let's go to Colin and see what he's got for a 60-second synopsis.
All right. Ben dreams about flying in the clouds and has visions of circuit boards. After drawing them up, he passes them off to his friend Wolfgang, the boy genius, who works some computer magic and uses Ben's drawings to generate a weird floating orb. Ben invites his new pal and bully destroyer Darren along, and together with Wolfgang, they use the orb to create a spacecraft called the Thunder Road that they eventually use to fly into outer space. The boys only manage to boldly go so far before their ship is beamed into an alien spaceship. Once on board, they discover their captors are Earth enthusiasts who speak to them in various TV dialogues. They have a party with their new alien friends, but the daddy ship comes home and puts an end to it. The boys head back to Earth with the stuff dreams are made of, I put that in quotes. Despite minimal navigational equipment, they not only make it back to Earth, but also manage to land in their hometown, albeit a crash landing in the lake. Ben continues to dream of flying in the clouds, but this time he's joined Peter Pan style by Wolfgang Darren and his crush Lori, who makes out with him in the moonlight.
Right on. So this movie came up because we said to Michael, you have to come back, and what do you want to do? And he says, we got to do The Explorers. So I said, oh, yeah, that's the one with Leah Thompson, isn't it? And he goes, no, that's Space Camp. And I go, oh, shit, well, I don't think I've seen Explorers, so I'm excited. And then I started watching Explorers, and I'm like, I think I might have seen Explorers. I'm not 100% sure. But some of this looks really familiar, like especially the aliens and the keyboard playing mouse for some reason was another one. And the dream. I remember the dream. It's like, did I dream the dream? Or I think I may have seen this movie at some point in my life. But it was obviously impactful enough on me that it just kind of gives me flashbacks when I watch it. That's the best
PTSD from this one.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I've repressed everything else or something. So I watched this movie and it's like, okay, this is familiar to me, but I don't look back at this one fondly. It's, I guess, a one-time watch maybe for me sometime in my life. But Michael, you requested this movie. So what is it about The Explorers?
I have such fond memories of this movie. It is like sort of like that. It's that undiscovered country, that sort of diamond in the rough. It doesn't get a lot of play. Not a lot of people talk about it. But to me, this is like right up there with Goonies. Like I have watched this movie so many times.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I shared it with my kids who are now, 13 and soon to be 12. I think about a year, year and a half ago, we watched as a family and they loved it. They were still right on board. And I literally rewatched it today. Like within 5 minutes before we started recording, I just finished up watching it again.
Have your kids seen the Goonies too?
Yes. Oh, okay. Absolutely, of course. Yes.
Well,
yeah,
no, Goonies,
I'm
actually, well, see, I recently showed my kids Back to the Future. The Goonies, however, is one that for some reason, my son is scared of a Teen Titans episode that spoofs the Goonies. And I'm like, he might not do well with the Goonies. So I haven't introduced that to them.
Okay.
And they're 9 and 10 now.
Mine have seen it. They are generally okay with that sort of stuff. So, I mean, obviously every kid's different. But my kids really like the Goonies. They really like this movie as well. And just, again, I think this movie, there's like 80% of this movie is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, just straight up, the script is great. The acting is amazing. Ethan Hawke, River Phoenix, and then even this Jason Pearson kid. But once they go into space, it's like, what the fuck just happened? Because you're dealing with 1980s sci-fi and low-budget sci-fi at that.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of hard to get through that part. But if we had better special effects, or if they'd found a way to kind of maybe navigate around that a little bit, I think this is an all-time classic, 80% of an all-time classic.
Okay. And Colin, you said before you had never seen this movie. So, yeah, never seen this movie. Ever heard of it?
Never heard of it. Ever.
Cool. Right on.
I honestly saw that Ethan Hawke was in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like,
it's his debut.
Ethan Hawke he's not a guy I think of as like a child actor.
Yeah. Yeah, for
I
sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. And him and River Phoenix, it's both of their debuts. So it's, yeah. Well, okay, let's jump into The Explorers, directed by Joe Dante. We've talked about Gremlins on this show, so we've talked about him before. Produced by David Bombeck and Edward S. Feldman, and written by Eric Luke, who makes an appearance in this movie as the teacher in the classroom, handing back the D-minus to Ben. Okay, normally this is where I say, now, you know, we open this movie, but I have a different approach for this particular episode because normally I don't discuss the upcoming episode with anyone at all. However, earlier today, Michael tweeted about how very excited he was about this movie. And so I know that he has, you know, recently watched it and how excited he is about it. And Colin, on the other hand, texted me yesterday and said, quote, I would rather be waterboarded than watch that piece of shit again. And so normally I don't go into this of with any knowledge of what people's opinions are. So for Michael, this is going to be an upward battle. Okay, we're
I'm used to it.
Okay, so I just wanted to establish the parameters before we officially start discussing this movie, because I've been so excited to know that how these two opposing opinions are going to come together, and that's why I love this show and bringing friends together to talk about this kind of thing. So, now, for Colin's sake, Colin, originally this movie would have been cut at 3 hours and 15 minutes.
What?
And the studio pushed up the release date. I guess they wanted to try to compete with Back to the Future or something. But it made Joe Dante kind of scramble and be like, well, this is what I have, but it's not done.
Mm.
So yeah,
the final, especially the final third act, the third act is not where they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Like, this was like a hastily put together cut.
This is an incomplete movie. So
gotcha. That
with
makes
this
a
discussion,
lot of sense.
Yeah, go into that, you know, right. That's why, for your sake, you know, I just wanted you to know right off the bat that this is not the movie that was intended to be seen. There should be a Joe Dante cut out there, but I guess it never happened.
Yeah. Sad. like the greatest point of that to me, I think, I don't know, again, you may not have been watching with the intensity that I would have, you know, hoped for, but the very first time that we meet Whack, the boy male alien kid, he's wearing like this weird barbarian fur coat looking thing. And then the next time we see him, he throws it off. He was wearing it because the suit wasn't finished. Like, they literally needed to film it. This costume wasn't done, so they just threw that on him to hide the fact that it was incomplete. And so the next time you see him, the suit had then been completed, so he throws it off. That's the only reason why it's there. Like, that's what we were dealing with in this third act.
That's amazing. Okay.
Well, I don't know how we're going to go about this, but I'm going to throw out my one point that I want to talk about on this movie is...
Yeah.
It's called Explorers, but do they explore...
No, that's true. Yeah, it is a poorly named movie, I guess.
I felt like part of me appreciates what the movie is going for, like that Goonies style, like you know, friends band. Like, I love the friendship and the hopefulness and all that. But I think there are certain points where I tried to think about, like, what do I think about this movie now, but also what would the, like, 5-year-old in me that I think this movie is meant for want. And I think I would have wanted to see these, like, young kids, like, actually explore, like, Star Trek style almost.
Yeah.
Like, wind up on different planets and stuff. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a little bit of semantics in that because they did go literally where no one has gone before. I think that was actually the phrase that they may have used. They made first contact, as far as we know, with an alien civilization. They weren't necessarily in control of the car, but they were in it when it went to a place no one had gone before. So I think semantically that is still considered exploring.
He wants junkyard spaceship. That's what he
junkyard
wants.
Junkyard spaceship.
That's what he wants.
Junkyard
this movie
spaceship.
It's like, it's to the point. Yeah. There's the movie. Yes. Junkyard spaceship.
And maybe they explored their friendship. The friendship was explored.
It's the internal exploration.
It's the friendship that they made along the way. Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
And the girlfriend, inexplicably, for some reason.
See, that's what the squad needed, first of all, was a girl.
Little estrogen. Well, too much of a sausage party, for sure.
Too much of a sausage. Way too much.
Way too much.
But also, definitely one that was, like, not just, like, obsessed about from afar.
Yeah, I thought that was weird. In this, because I'll be, like... I found it really hard to, like, stay focused on this movie. And in the second watch, I kind of was just wanted to make sure, like, and maybe to your point about this movie was supposed to be longer, I wonder how much of the, like, relationship development between Ben and Laurie might have gotten cut out, because it seems that whole story seems very disjointed.
It does. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, they kiss at the end, and the only thing I've ever heard her say to him is, "Are you okay?"
When he fell from peeping Tom in her room. Yes. Yeah, that makes absolutely no sense. I can even throw Bozo the dog. Like, I want more Bozo in this show.
I want more of the rat. I don't know.
Oh, yes. Go to hell. Go to hell.
But this movie opens with quite the synthesizer soundtrack, and I'm like, oh, okay, so that's how you're going to be explorers. Okay, here we go. But we get like the dream of the flying over the clouds to kind of open this movie with, and this is where I'm kind of like, okay, I vaguely remember this, and then it got to the CGI, the circuit board CGI, the Tron quality CGI. Like, I guess this is the first film that ILM co-produced with a major studio, and it's like, okay, well, ILM was trying out some early CG.
Yeah, it reminded me of Tron and it gave me Tron and Last Starfighter vibes.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, totally. So he wakes up from his dream and he starts writing something. And then this is another one of those where I'm like, Nom, I'm feeling it. I'm getting the flashbacks.
to be like 10 years old or whatever. How old are these guys? Like 12, maybe?
Maybe 12.
Well, the actors are like 15, but I think they're supposed to be 12.
Okay.
And I was 9, my birthday was the week after this, or the week before this came out. So I would have been like 10 years old, which is, I think, the perfect age to see this movie. That's probably why it imprinted on me, because I saw myself in each of those three characters. There's aspects of my personality that fit all three. And I had a couple really good friends growing up. I'm still really good friends with to this day, you know, almost 40 years later. And it just hit me perfectly. Yeah. I think I can see the flaws in this movie, but I love it nonetheless. Yeah.
If they were 15, poor Ethan Hawke, he was a late bloomer. Oh, yeah, boy.
Well, this is a movie where the kids look like kids. Like, if we made this today, they would all be 25-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like, so it's, I do like the fact, and again, Ethan Hawke is a really good actor. River Phoenix is a really good actor. This Jason Pearson kid, I do a show about Smallville. You may have heard about it. And I talk all the time about how the acting elevates the writing. Mm-hmm. These kids freaking nail it in this movie.
Yeah.
Whether you don't like the script or not. The acting, I think, is pretty good. I mean, there's a few cheesy parts because they're kids, but I don't think that's the kids' fault.
Well, now, I have to say, when they're walking to school the next day, and River Phoenix is carrying his armload of books, and the bullies come out, and we get to meet Steve Jackson.
Yeah.
This kid, when he was leaning against the tree, I'm like, oh, shit, is that a young Brad Pitt? What the fuck? Like, doesn't he give you major, like, young Brad Pitt vibes?
It didn't. I mean, I'm not gonna say no, but I didn't. It didn't hit me that way. Like, I didn't think that watching it.
Oh, okay. We'll see.
Yeah. To me, I was kind of like, I think that every kid who was hired to play a bully in an '80s movie took the exact same class because he was just the archetype,
just pounding their fists into their palm and
can't understand words and like,
yeah. Oh boy, yeah, but yeah, no, but the kid's name is Bobby Fight, which is also kind of a cool name. But I'm like, I don't know, that could have been like an alias of Brad Pitt, Bobby Fight, Brad Pitt. It's still kind of, you know.
maybe you've come upon some weird Hollywood dark secret.
That's
maybe,
right.
Maybe Bobby Fight murdered somebody and then had to go underground and reemerged later as Brad Pitt.
Well, see, I mean, when we first meet Darren as well, I was like, that's not Sean Astin, is it?
I didn't get Sean Astin, but no? I mean, obviously his introduction is very much like the movie The Bodyguard. Like, he's got some like, of those vibes coming in.
Whitney Houston's The Bodyguard?
No, not that one. Oh, okay. I think My Bodyguard, I think is what it's called. Oh, My Bodyguard. Yeah.
That would be such a weird pull for The Bodyguard to make on the they're like, hey, wait, let's duplicate this movie from or the scene from Explorers.
Yeah, that would be weird. Now, this is called My Bodyguard, and Adam Baldwin plays a character who basically takes up for this nerd sort of guy, and like he's his bodyguard. He's getting picked on at school, so he gave me some Linderman vibes.
Okay.
I thought maybe one of the best acted scenes in the movie was when Ben and Darren show up at Darren's house for the first time, like when Ben follows him there, and just the way that, I mean, that kid, Jason Presson or whatever, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy. In a movie where I think maybe I had my guard up and wasn't trying to feel too much, his character got me a little bit. Yeah. Like, just the sadness of, like, whatever. And he never really says what's going on with his dad. Yeah. But when they look at each other, and he's like, he hauls junk. And then they both have this look where it's like, and I guess maybe in the 1980s, being a junk hauler was the most, I don't know, frowned upon profession you could ever have.
Or is it code great. For something? Like, is he someone that steals copper wiring out of abandoned houses?
He's cutting catalytic converters off of cars?
Yeah, exactly. But
yeah, I mean, obviously all three of the characters are archetypal, you know, maybe almost to a fault. But I do think that kid, I think he gives the most natural performance of everyone. I think River Phoenix, I do think, is a tremendous actor, but he's playing a sort of exaggerated nerd stereotype, so he leans into that very heavily.
Well, he auditioned for Darren.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
But I think that Darren and or Ethan Hawke and Jason, I think they get very naturalistic. Like, I feel like they're just being themselves. Yeah. Where River Phoenix, sometimes you can see the acting that is happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that Jason kid, I know that kid. Like, that's the thing. It's like, I could go, I knew people just like that kid at that age in school. And I think he plays it so well. And there's even this kind of weird through line about he kind of likes his dad, but, you know, his dad obviously not the nicest person, I guess, maybe. Yeah. But at the end of the movie, and I'm jumping way ahead, he takes two things into space with him. One is his Walkman, which he's expressed many times how much he loves that. And then he takes a little toy that his dad gave him. And when it comes time to give something to the aliens, he keeps the toy. Like, he keeps that and gives them this other thing. I think that actually, to me, that hit me kind of hard. Like, holy crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, that's... I was gonna say when he gets to the D and he's like, "Oh, I guess I'm just stupid."
Stupid.
That also made me really sad.
I know.
I just wanted
to
hug that kid.
I had flashbacks to being in the days of school where they did stuff. Like, I don't think they do that anymore. I don't think they like walk down the aisles going A's, A's, F. A. Like, I don't think they announce the grades like that anymore. At least not in my school I work at.
No.
But I was alive when that stuff happened, and sometimes you got called out. And you know, I was a smart kid, but I wasn't very motivated, and I did really poorly. And here's this kid who's on the verge of the greatest scientific discovery in the history of the world, and basically his teachers have given up on him, think he's an idiot, and he kind of thinks that of himself. There's some gravitas to that performance
that
fit this movie.
It's very understated, too, though, because, like, they're not shining the spotlight on that. Like, even the comment about, I guess I'm an idiot then, isn't that even done as the camera's already past him? Like, isn't that from off camera even?
No, it's on camera, but there's like a good 5-second delay where he's just sort of sitting with it.
Yeah.
It's still on him, so you see his face in that moment.
Yeah. So it's just, but it's all that sort of thing where, like you say, we don't have to really have him talk about it to be able to put this whole story together in our head of what this kid is kind of going through. I mean,
right.
Yeah. And maybe,
I mean, when it comes to like putting the spaceship together, he's doing like welding and wiring. I mean, like, this kid, he's got a trades future in his, you know, in front of him. He may not be, you know, an academic, but he's going to make a good living with his hands. He's
crafty.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not an idiot. He's just not like those tests are biased against him.
Yeah. I mean, the only one that's really in trouble with the three of them in the future is the Dreamer.
Oh yeah. He has got no future. If he can't make this alien contact thing work out, he's in trouble.
Yeah. We got the career union man, and we've got the nerd. But yeah, I don't know. Hopefully the Ethan Hawke character starts writing some stories or something, like starts writing science fiction, because otherwise, he's in trouble.
Yeah, I agree.
Once they get to Wolfgang's house, so you brought up that scene, Colin, where they're kind of, you know, where we get to know Darren on the walk to Wolfgang's house. And you know, as natural as their performance is in the basement, maybe it's offset with all the chaos that's going on upstairs. And this is another part where I had one of those flashbacks of, oh, I remember this part where it's the dad, where I'm like, oh shit, that's James Cromwell. That's the farmer from Babe. But I remember him in his trench coat with the oxygen mask on and everything like that.
But it was just over his nose. So it was like the weirdest thing. And maybe that's a real thing, but it looked weird to me.
But that's what they all do in the shuttle, too, is only nose oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the one kid that puts on, like, the full respirator or whatever.
I thought it was weird that River Phoenix didn't try for the, like, German accent or whatever the rest of his family is. supposed to be.
Yeah, would have been interesting, I suppose.
Well, maybe he's first generation, and so he grew up in America. His parents came over, so they still have it. Maybe.
Yeah. I will say, like, on River Phoenix, he's one of these people that I only hear about people's reverence for him, and I'm not sure that this was a good first like entry point into River Phoenix.
Oh, tell me you've seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
I have.
Fuck
not,
that. Have you seen Stand By Me?
I have not.
Like, that is the most iconic River Phoenix performance in my opinion. Like, oh my God, that is a movie you need to see.
No, but I see, for me, it's at the very least, this man has to tell me that he has seen all of the Indiana Jones movies.
Apparently not.
I thought we've had this conversation. I've only seen Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
What? You saw the worst
No! No, this is not holy sh— oh.
That's
like someone telling me they love Star Wars, but they've only seen The Phantom Menace.
Wow. Holy fuck. Well, in the beginning of The Last Crusade, River Phoenix plays a young Indiana Jones. And so I figured that might be your only reference point for River Phoenix, but to find out that not even Indiana Jones.
No.
Wow. Stunned.
All right, well... If you ever want to have me back, can I call dibs on one of the good Indiana Joneses?
Well, we're talking about doing theme months coming up, and maybe we just have to do like Indiana Jones quadrilogy month.
Or trilogy.
Well, no, there's the new one coming out in a couple months.
I don't need to watch the Crystal Skulls again.
No one does. No one ever needed to.
No, that's his punishment. He has to watch it again for this show because he hasn't seen the other three.
I was in the movie theater watching some movie the other day, and the trailer for the new one came on, and people were so excited. And I was just like, why? Why are you excited for this movie?
The music was so beautiful. They did a reorchestration of it, and I wept.
Yeah. Wow.
So I have questions about this computer that Wolfgang has. But first, I need to talk about this computer in Sponsorship Corner. So, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Explorers is brought to you by Apple Macintosh Computers, Fisher-Price, Frigidaire, Ever-Ready Batteries, Quaker, Ruffles, Coca-Cola, and Tang, plus the fictional Colony Drive-In. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
That's it?
That's it. That's it.
When at the end of the movie, when their ship crashes into the lake, that computer is worth $25,000 back in the 1980s at Apple. That could have bought a house in the 80s.
Yeah, actually, see, I said Macintosh, but I don't know for sure if it's Macintosh. But I'm sure I thought one of the brochures that's on his desk says Macintosh.
Yeah, so I think I read some of the trivia. I think that they say it's an Apple. And I think that it looks like an Apple, but I remember something in the trivia, they said that it actually wasn't an Apple they were using on set for like the, you know, actual movie, like product, whatever, props.
Tin box one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay. Now, first of all, $128,000. Holy shit.
Top of the line in the 80s.
Can you imagine? Like, do you remember those days? Holy crap.
I was the first person I knew that owned a personal computer. When I, right around the time this movie came out, I was around 10 years old. My parents bought me a computer. So again, I see myself in all three characters. I certainly have elements of all three of them in my personality. But yeah, I had a Tandy 1000, which was an IBM clone,
nice.
Dual 3.5 or 5.4 floppies. It was a DOS-based computer. It was awful. It was basically a brick. I had no idea how to do anything with it, but I loved it.
My older brother, he went through the Amiga computers.
Okay.
So that's what we had a lot of in our house. And so at the time, it's like that one was unique to like regular, you know, whatever running computers. It was one of those ones that I think died out. I think Amiga's died out. pretty sure. But there were some cool games on that. Like Zach McCracken. Oh boy, did I love me some Zach McCracken. Sierra Gaming. My God. Anyway.
King's Quest for me.
Yeah.
I love the original King's Quest.
Well, and we had an IBM that played Zork. Oh, yep. Yeah. Good old Zork. Yep. Oh, boy. Yep. Colin has no idea.
You got a bunch of nerds.
Nerds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100%. Have we not met before? Are you new here?
Oh, boy. But now, so is this like a laptop computer that he's carrying around? Like, is this like an 80s laptop? Because what is powering it when they take it out to the field? Does it have a built-in battery?
We actually see that. There's a scene where he pulls out, it's like a 9-volt DC battery.
He pulls out a 9-volt battery, but that's not out of the computer, is it? I thought that was
It was, because he said, like, how fast will it go? And Wolfgang's like, well, it depends on how much power. You know, and he's like, this is how much we're using right now. And that's when we then cut to him getting that Eveready battery out, because he wants to, like, you know, oh, more power, it sort of a thing.
So you're telling me a computer is being run by a 9-volt battery.
It's the 80s, man. Computers can do anything.
People didn't understand computers, so they're like, okay, yep. that seems legit.
Yeah, pretty much, yes. The computers were literally were magic. C.S. Lewis, you know, not C.S. Lewis. Who's the other guy? Carl Sagan. The magic is indistinguishable from technology. Like, in the 80s, computers were magic because they could do anything that you wanted them to in a script.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to also think that, like, Wolfgang seems like he's a pretty smart guy. I'm sure he's custom-built that computer to some extent.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, he eventually does, for sure, when he has, like, tin box monitor going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he has to do up all the specs that Ben has been sending his way with his little dream diagrams.
Yeah, well, he's really dismissive at first. He's like, he probably won't do anything. And then he's like, oh, this actually looks like something.
Yeah, he almost kills them all.
Yeah.
If he had typed in a different number, this would have been a much gorier movie.
Yeah, definitely been shorter. Yeah.
It would have been Deadpool with his one bullet left.
You know? Or just like the bubble appears right where his head is and like he just like decapitates him. His head's floating in there.
Decapitates him, yeah.
I don't feel so good.
It's the gritty remake that we're going to do.
That's right, yeah. It was kind of a neat moment with when the shelf, like, you know, when mm-hmm. all the books moved, and like it took me like a while to go, okay, I kind of remember the holes in books, but I don't remember why there's holes in books, and that shelf didn't move the right way for a laser coming from the computer, because at first that's what I thought the situation was, is I thought he had somehow made a death ray or something.
But I'm like, it's well, a death star.
But the shelf moved to the right, not like the other. Yep. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, again, this is the 80s. Those were all practical effects. And I thought for the most part, like, you know, if you're watching it with a modern eye, you can kind of pull out a few things. But for the most part, I thought the kids did a good job of like reacting to both the physical and then the CGI later added stuff. I thought it was a lot of fun just watching their basement fall apart during that second experiment.
Well, one that for some stupid reason impressed me was the ship taking off for the first time.
Yeah.
Because they have it built up on the wooden stilts, and then they activate the force field, and the stilts shatter.
Yep.
And
that was a pretty cool effect.
It was neat, right? Like, the timing of having to start craning up the practical spaceship that they had, practical tilt-a-whirl seat, and shattering those. Like, yeah, that's some pretty impressive 80s pyrotechnic planning.
Mm-hmm.
And the dirt in the field when it starts going underground. I kind of want to see the point of view of him going through the ground, though.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Yeah, he's going to China.
Couldn't they have just made the ball? I mean, I guess they wouldn't have known whether or not if they would need oxygen inside the ball or how that would work. But I was thinking after, like, couldn't they have just made the ball really huge and tried to make, like, a handheld computer thing that they all could have just, like, sat in, basically, instead of having to make a ship around it?
Yeah. Or couldn't they have just floated up in the bubble itself?
Well, true, but yeah, but I don't know. I do think there's also just like a human need for something familiar around them. I don't know. Yeah. Are you familiar with the movie Contact?
Yeah.
So remember, like, they build a seat, even though there wasn't one in the plans the aliens sent. And then as they're trying to make it, it falls apart because they're like, you don't need a seat, morons.
Yeah.
Humans wanted a seat because that's what they expect they need.
Yeah. And seatbelts. Yeah. I mean, they even have seatbelts. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to trust themselves to this invisible force field, but yeah.
Still got to have seatbelts, right?
We got seatbelts.
Yeah.
Which protects them, I guess. I mean, somehow they're able to fall great distances and be perfectly fine in this very dangerous
kids. At 12-year-old kids bounce. You know that. You got kids.
Yeah, that's
they
right.
Bounce.
Yeah, they're rubbery. Yeah. I know. I get that, but still.
Yeah, I did. I did appreciate the scene. I don't think it's when they go into space, but when they make their first flight and like how excited Ben is, and Wolfgang's like trying to like. This movie did do a really great job of capturing, like, childlike wonder and excitement.
See, so this is my favorite thing, because even though I try to be a very positive person, I actually have a very dark and depressive streak through me. That the thing that solidifies this as such a great movie is that because you have that moment where you have Ben, the dreamer, who gets what he's always wanted. He goes to outer space and meets aliens, and he is completely just saddened by this. He's like, this makes no sense. Why are they like that? Like, he was so upset that they weren't this superior, like, race that was, like, going to teach him everything about the world. They were just a bunch of kids who liked TV. But the way he plays it, he's just so disappointed. It's like, you're in fucking outer space, dude. Yeah. Calm down.
Yeah. Never meet your heroes, right?
Never meet your heroes, exactly.
I mean, I think that is a fun thing that even we do now. Like all science fiction is basically based on the premise that, like, everything out there is like smarter than us. Like, if we meet somebody out there, like, they're gonna be way smarter than us and way better than us and have all the answers to all the problems we have and all the questions we have and everything like that. So yeah, we might be disappointed if the day ever comes.
Yeah.
I do think it's really weird though that Wack is basically naked. He has, like, a necklace and a backpack on. His sister's fully dressed, and his dad is wearing, like, briefs. So, letting it all... He's going commando in front of everybody? I thought that was a weird choice.
They never did finish the costume.
Apparently, yes. That was the next... That was in the three-hour cut. There would have been a scene where he puts on some underoos or something.
Yeah, yeah. He should have been wrapped in a towel or something. Just got out of the shower.
Yeah, exactly. Because they were kind of wet and slimy. There was definitely some sliminess going on there.
Yeah. Oh, lots of it. Yeah. An obscene amount, actually.
Did I pick up on it? Like, were the aliens, like, somehow informing Ben? Or did I make that up?
Oh, yeah. No,
yeah, that's what they were sending him, like, the dreams that allowed him to create they wanted to meet. Now, here's the other thing about this movie that just absolutely I love. And I feel like I've talked about this before. Maybe it was on Farm to Fable. But one of the things that I'm a sucker for is when you give me a character that has been there before, but we don't really explain it. Like, one of the most famous examples for me is in The Lost Boys. At the end, when Wilford Brimley is like, yeah, I hate fucking vampires. It's like, what? You know, there's like this whole thing that just... You have to imagine there's this other story that Wilford Brimley went through as a kid dealing with vampires. And in this movie...
I have to pump the brakes just in case we get a text. It isn't Wilford Brimley in The Lost Boys. I forget who it is, but it's not Wilford Brimley.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, I thought it was Wilford Brimley. Well, whoever that dude is that looks just like Wilford Brimley, who's like, at the end, he's just like, yeah, the only thing I hate about this town is I hate fucking vampires.
Yeah.
So then we get this guy who's like, he's like a 40, 50-year-old guy, and he's clearly... been through this before. Now, whether it was with these same aliens or not, but he also was contacted, and he ended up going into like somewhat of an Air Force sort of thing. And there's just something about that absolutely, I love the idea that, you know, they tried to contact him, but the technology wasn't there. They didn't have computers when he was 12.
Yeah.
So he couldn't have gotten there. As I don't know, there's something about that just absolutely, I love that idea that this is like an ever evolving thing. And that there will be another kid in the future that carries on.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry to actually you there, Michael. You know, it's just
it's all right.
We covered Lost Boys on this show, so I would be remiss if I wasn't like, wait, no, this I do know the answer to. You know, we put out enough falsities on this show that we.
So apparently, it's Bernard Hughes.
There you go. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. With the thoughts, Colin, there's the point where Darren sits down in that one chair and he's like, I saw the dream. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that amplifies their thoughts to send it to Earth.
Okay.
And I think that's also might be how they're receiving the TV. I don't know. Unless those antenna on his back are actually what's doing it.
Because I don't think they're targeting Ben. Like, I don't think they're like, hey, we want this kid. They just want to make contact with Earth. And Ben, being the dreamer, is just sort of receptive to that. Because they all bring something to the party. Wolfgang is the smart one. Darren is the sort of the builder. But without Ben, without that dreamer who can connect with them, it wouldn't have happened.
I love the idea of some Russian kid at the same time also trying to other Cold War. the other space race.
The space race that we never knew about between kids in their backyard. Yeah, they didn't have the criminal on their side that could get inside the junkyard.
That's
though.
Right.
Yeah, they never got
They didn't have a tilt-a-whirl.
That's right. No tilt-a-whirls. Yep. It's communism.
That's right.
Damn it.
Communism.
Yeah, I mean, to Michael's point, kind of off the hop, this movie really lost me when we got to the aliens. Like,
Yeah, I really think it's great till then, and then it's like, this is hard. This is very hard to watch.
And I kind of felt like, oh, now it's just... It came off like almost like... I'm a puppet guy now. Like, look at what I can do.
Yeah. And I wonder about that 3-hour cut. Cause I mean, truly, if you just take what had happened till then, it is such a good coming of age, teenage kid adventure. You know, they've got this thing and they're building, they're coming together. It's so well done. But the moment they go into outer space, it's a completely different movie. Tonally, it's just weird and the special effects just aren't there. And it really is sort of like a weird sort of a dichotomous experience, because I love the movie up until then and I love the ending of it, but the whole part with the aliens is really hard.
Well, to me, it reminds me kind of something like Aladdin, where once the genie shows up, it's like, okay, here we go. But when this alien shows up, it's like, I'm sorry, but you, sir, are no Robin Williams. Mm. You are not making this fun for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like there wasn't stakes. Like, there wasn't big stakes. It just seemed like things were just kind of, like, going along. And there wasn't, you know, like, in the Goonies, I think that was so long ago. It's like, what's Sean Astin's character? That guy, when he has his, like, big speech about, like, you know, we gotta keep going or whatever, blah, blah. Like,
that's right. Yeah, it's our time down like, here.
This movie needed that.
Yeah. So you don't think there was enough danger in the Wipeout style layout of their spaceship? That's what it reminded me of. Once they get separated and start going down slides and like jumping from one pole to another, I'm like, did the guys from Wipeout, were they big Explorers fans when they created the show? It's Wipeout without big red balls. They're silver instead.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
What a fucked up layout of that spaceship.
Yeah, it makes me think it's a Galaxy Quest. Like, who fucking designed this thing?
Do you guys have like any knowledge of what the 3-hour version of the story was?
No, I do not.
No.
No idea.
I wonder if that's
no
something. Idea.
Yeah, and I, yeah. So again, I don't know. I don't know for sure that it was like the 3 hours was like what Joe wanted, Dante wanted. It's very common that the first time a movie's put together, it's almost always way longer because it's everything. Like, it's just everything that was shot in order, and then you cut it down to, the theatrical release. And I think the big thing was that, at least what the trivia on IMDb said, that the time got moved up. Like, Joe thought he had, like, 2 or 3 more months to go through and do editing, maybe do some reshoots, you know, and all of a sudden they're like, no, you need it by tomorrow or, you know, need it by next week. So he just had to rapidly cut it down and make it as coherent as he could. So I don't know that we lost a whole lot, but we probably, the choices that were made, like what left in, you know, so I'm saying, like, I don't think this movie needs to be 3 hours long. I just think they had to cut it with a machete rather than a scalpel to get it down to their theatrical.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, with a Hollywood script, traditionally, you look at a script and it's 1 page per minute. Like, each page of script is usually 1 minute of screen time on average. So, like, I just feel like there's a 400-page draft of this script out there somewhere. And that's why the version that would be available would be 3 hours and 15 minutes long.
I'm sure there is some of that, but there's also probably multiple takes of the same scene, maybe different reaction shots that would have been in there. So you would have like three versions similar, but, you know, like just a little bit different, and they pick which one of the three they want can also be some of that as well. Yeah. So those production cuts, I think those are what they're normally called when they first say, here's the movie to the studio, it'll have multiple angles, multiple cuts. So it's not like, it's not really a coherent movie, if that makes sense. Like there are some duplicated shots and then they cut out everything that, you know, like this one, not this one type of a thing. But I'm sure there was still some, like, I do agree that the girlfriend or the girl, that makes no sense. There had to be some of that was cut because it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like you're saying, you know, we keep jumping back to like the spaceship part of it, but like the whole bit where they break into the junkyard for the first time, you know, I bring my own key, you know, and like the bit with the gum, the dog eating
the gum. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I bring him all kinds of different treats, and I finally found out what he liked. It's bubble gum, and he's like, "He likes gum." And he's like, "Yeah, don't you?"
Yeah,
well, yeah,
yeah.
I love that. This kid, he nailed it.
Yeah, my 2.5-year-old daughter watched a portion of this movie with me today, and she really enjoyed the part where Wolfgang gets trapped in the bubble and gets like sent through the earth.
Oh, okay.
And then she also really enjoyed the dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it also gives you that priceless line of, yeah, you know, one day I'll teach him how to blow a bubble.
Bubbles, yeah.
That was also a great line from that kid. Apparently, in the, you know, just little Easter egg, in the pile of scraps, the sled from Citizen Kane, Rosebud, is on top of one of the piles in the junkyard. So
there's also a reference to Gremlins, and when the older gentleman is looking at the newspaper referencing when the ship, you know, went through and destroyed the town, there's a reference to the riot in whatever falls place it's called.
Yeah, Kingston Falls. Yeah.
Kingston Falls.
Yeah, which I found kind of funny. And I happened to notice that in my IMDb trivia, just as I was kind of scrolling through IMDb before I watched the movie, I just that for some reason jumped out at me. And so I'm like, okay, this is in the same universe as Goonies and Gremlins then. So I'm behind that. Because Goonies, we established, also has a Gremlins reference in it.
Oh,
yes,
I don't know if I know that.
When Chunk phones the sheriff, and the sheriff says, yeah, Lawrence, right, this is probably like that time that you saw those crazy green monsters or whatever. Yeah. So it's there is a reference to Gremlins in that movie as well. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, all of that was so much fun. And for some reason, even though I wasn't very familiar with this movie, I just had all this 80s nostalgia where it's like, oh man, everyone's just cruising around on their bikes.
I mean, there's definitely Stranger Things vibes, like,
yeah, like,
you know, it. That element of that, of their
even the fact that the one part I also loved was when they're like, let's like leave your bike here, let's walk, let's take the creek home, like let's walk, let's walk through this secluded kind of dead body on occasion creek.
Yeah. I mean, they go into a store and come out with baseball cards. I mean, it's like, oh, I miss the 80s. Oh, they were so great. That was the life. That was so the life. I mean, Ethan Hawke, like, his character has a sleeping bag nailed to the roof.
Yes.
That's amazing. Now that
I want to talk about that because as a kid, I loved that idea. And I got on my roof as a kid because I thought that was something cool kids did. Yeah. It wasn't. But if you nail a sleeping bag to your roof, that is bad all the way around. Sleep bag's going to get destroyed. Weather is going to get blown off. It's going to get waterlogged. And you're going to put holes in your roof, which means it's going to leak. Kids, do not do that. PSA, do not nail a sleeping bag to your roof.
But at least he knows that if he wants to lay down on a sleeping bag or on something soft up on the roof to stare at the stars, because he doesn't actually get into the sleeping bag, at least he knows that thing will slide. Because it is a slippery surface, right? Nylon on any surface is going to slide. So at least he had the wherewithal to actually nail it down. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I did some, I had some delinquency when I was younger. I was definitely, you know, I had my moments. Those, the rockets from the, you know, you do the model rockets that you fire off into the sky. Yeah, we used to like to scrape the powder out of those and do things with them. We used to like to explode aerosol cans, things like that, right?
Yep.
But we were smart about it. Or, you know, no matter what, we at least thought we were smart about it. But we weren't reckless about it. We took it out to like a big empty field, which didn't even have grass. And then we would start a fire with a wick so that we had time to get to a safe distance to watch this aerosol can explode. That's the kind of stuff we did. And I like to see that these kids are, they are showing some restraint, even in their recklessness of making this spaceship. It is, no, we are going to make safety belts for these, for this spaceship and all that sort. We're going to take these precautions. You know, at least they had the scientific mind in there that was saying, hey, no, we have to take baby steps.
But then they kind of accelerate. Like once they had the spaceship built, it was like, okay, we spent all this time building the ship. Now we're going to fly into outer space and be fine.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I cannot go away whenever, cannot make done with this conversation without at least mentioning my love for the fake movie that they made to show in this movie as a movie that they were watching. So the whole Starkiller isn't a real movie. They made it for this movie as a fake movie that they would see. And I love the fact they went to that level. And as someone who recently wrote a game, Action Film Cinema, you can buy it now, that's about playing through bad movies, Starkiller is exactly the type of movie.
Say that, again one more time.
Action 12 Cinema. Okay. It's a game that I wrote.
Okay, cool, cool.
And it's all about playing through that level of movie, like the you know, spaceships on wires. My favorite part of the whole fake movie is when they're on, he's like trying to communicate, and he like picks up the little antenna prop that had fallen over earlier. There's a stupid little moment, but it cracks me up so much every time I see it. I love it. He's like, he was like my father. Do you understand? He was my father.
That's awesome. I didn't know that was a fake That's a fake movie, but I love it when movies and TV shows do that. My favorite example is probably The Office when they have their like
threat level midnight.
No, not that one, but when they have the like group,
the Jack Black,
the group that watches this like this romantic comedy. It's like Jack Black and
Cloris Leachman.
Oh no,
so funny.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, and it's named Starkiller because that was originally what Luke Skywalker's name was going to be in the original Star Wars. So they're like, okay, well, we'll make this movie Starkiller.
Yep.
Yeah. And I did not realize that's Robert Picardo in there.
Yes, yeah, it's Robert Picardo.
Yeah, because like I was a Voyager watcher, so I am aware of Robert Picardo from that. And like he looked so different with hair, but then to find out that he is also Whack and their father, he plays all three of those characters: Starkiller, Whack, and the father.
And apparently, the makeup was so awful; it was like it literally put lesions on his head, and he was like crying in between takes because it was so painful and uncomfortable.
Yeah. And meanwhile, River Phoenix would take off his glasses between takes because he didn't want to look bad in front of the kids. Yeah. Talk to Robert Picardo. You know, he had some real problems there, River. God. Cry me a river.
Really... he did die.
Dead joke. Yeah, okay, sorry. But yeah. I stand by that terrible joke, though.
Well, you know what? I'll give you props for that. If you're going to make the joke, at least stand by it.
Yeah. Now, I do have to say that along with the girl storyline, because really, like, he's just a stalker. He's a creepy-ass stalker in this movie. But I also, like, the police storyline is so thrown away as well. We end up having the chopper guys. The smooth move, X-Lax. Is this where that saying came from, this movie?
I don't know because I've heard it in so many other movies. Yeah, I don't know where it originated from, but maybe.
I've been saying it my whole life, and I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Did I just Did I just find out the origin of Smooth Move X-Labs?
Smooth Move X-Labs, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, like, that whole character was also thrown away. It's like, and when he finds the ship, and he's like, you go get him, kid, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, well, then why did you come after him in such a menacing, terrifying way that you made this kid run away? It's like, no, I want to help you. I mean,
right.
Man,
you got to have that miscommunication for the plot to work. But again, I love the idea, maybe not the execution, but I love the idea that this guy went through a similar journey as a kid, but he didn't get there. And he's so excited. He just wants to be part of the team now. Yeah. Like, I guarantee he would have bought Doritos and Mountain Dew if they would have let him jump in the Tilt War with him.
Yeah, but he's like, you go get him, kid. And then he's never seen from again. Like,
he should have been in the last scene flying with all the kids.
Yeah, that's right. Bring the old man along. That's yeah.
Bring the old man back.
What could make that scene any weirder?
Now that I'm no longer any of the kids, I am the old man. Yeah. Then yes, bring the old man along. He wants to be part of the team too.
Yeah, I mean, why did they make his father a scientist if they're not going to ever bring his expertise into it? Like, why does the science kid hide it from his science dad? He actually seems to have a very tight relationship with his parents, strangely enough. The other thing I don't understand when it comes to them testing things, like you said, you know, the first time they just test it out and they take all these precautions. And then the second time they're like, fuck it, let's go to space. But they also decide, hey, we don't need oxygen. When did that decision come into play?
So, yeah, there's a scene after the first failed trip because they ran out of oxygen. They have another dream. And this is the first time they share the dream because all three of the boys are in there and they see the element that Ben had not been able to remember correctly the first time. And so when that was added into the circuit board, it creates oxygen for them. So the force bubble becomes oxygen producing and they don't need to take their own. And that's when they're like, okay, we're going to go into space. We know what's going to happen, but we have oxygen now.
Yeah. Okay. That I didn't know. See, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, that's the scene where they're in, like, what's-his-face's dad's garage, and then, like, the hole burst through.
The tool shed.
That's because they created, like, oxygen out of a circuitry. Again, it's magic at this point.
See, out of all the houses to choose that ends up destroying the work shed, it has to be the father that I'm guessing is abusive.
It's hinted at heavily, but not explicitly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like, you know, Jenny in Forrest Gump. You know, it's hinted at explicitly. Yeah.
Well, he at very least has a drinking problem. I did the one
at the very least.
The one scene, like when Darren shows up drinking beer, I thought that was that threw me off a little bit.
I knew that kid. Yeah. But again, that goes back to how this movie has a sort of weird depressive, through line, because they went to outer space, they met aliens, and they come home and Darren's like, my dad's up. Like, I think we all know that means he's going to get the shit beat out of him right when he gets home. Like, he's had this amazing experience and he's probably going to get beaten by his dad when he gets home. He was like, oh, my dad's up. Like, I don't, there's something, the way that hit me is like, this is so sad, but in the way it works in a weird way for me. Now, I don't want kids to get beaten, but for the movie it works.
If this movie was made today, Darren would have stayed with the aliens and gone on to live a better life.
Yeah, you're probably right, yes. He would have got to stay, Ben would have had to go back, and that would have been why he was depressed.
Yeah. See, it makes me wonder what else was in there. What else was in the cut?
Yeah. We need to know.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a movie that, as I kind of go through it, it falls under the category that a lot of the movies that we come across on this show is, there is a lot of potential here. But somewhere along the way, the ball was dropped. Like, there's a better movie here.
Yeah, I feel like this movie was in tough, you know, like, it would suck, I think, to not be able to finish a movie the way you want to. And then to also, I mean, I feel like from what I recall from watching the movies that made us, I think, like, it's not that people expected Back to the Future to be, like, this massive success, but it did end up being this, like, crazy thing. Plus, like, Goonies was released only a month before. So I feel like I would imagine this movie would automatically just be compared to the Goonies. Like,
yeah. Yeah. The Goonies in space. Yeah. That's what all the headlines probably said.
So I don't know. Again, I also think it would be weird. You know, that's kind of the conceit of your show in a way. But like, if I had not seen this movie as a kid, I didn't, you know, have these fond memories. If I just saw it for the first time ever today, would I have even liked it? I don't. I mean, I want to say yes, because I still think that that first like half to three quarters works. The whole friendship and the exploration, and like I think the acting is great. But once it gets to space, it kind of loses me now, and I still love the movie. So I think it would have been really hard to get through.
Yeah.
For the like with brand new eyes, but I also think like honestly, like the original Star Wars. Go back and watch the original A New Hope with fresh eyes. It's pretty hokey. Yeah. Princess Bride, one of my top favorite movies of all time. Kind of silly. Yeah. Like I don't know that any of those would work for the first time ever as a, you know, 45-year-old, 47-year-old.
Princess Bride.
Yeah, I was gonna,
we did Princess Bride. Princess we still Bride, love yeah. Princess Bride.
But again, I did watch.
You
did,
still
I did
love
watch
it. Yeah, I still love
like,
it.
Like if you watch it.
Yeah, but
movies are so different. The one thing I was going to say with this movie, having watched it for the first time now, is and yeah. I find this with almost any movie from, you know, early 90s. Like mid to like the end of 80s is they're just narratively and pacing wise so different. Like people don't realize, I don't think, like nowadays how fast movies go. Like it's just bang bang bang, like everything, like story is just moving on at like such a rapid clip, whereas in older movies I always like the thing I found it really hard to just like focus in on this movie and just like sit and let it like come at me because it's so slow. Like everything happens so slowly.
Yeah.
And you're just kind
the
of
montage
like
montage is literally them falling asleep in class.
Yeah. Complete tangent, but you're talking about if this is the originator of the Smooth Move X-Lax.
Yeah.
Did whack mean bad because of this movie?
Oh.
Like, did they go, oh, that alien is terrible. That was whack.
And whack.
That became the 80s slang for sucks.
Maybe. I don't know.
Because he did.
I'd have to cross-reference with my Ebonics dictionary from...
What is the etymology of whack?
Yeah.
Or maybe Urban Dictionary would know.
Yeah, I don't hold this one against you like I do some of the others, Colin, because I think this would be a hard movie to love today for the first time. But as someone who was 10 years old when it came out, watched it as a 10-year-old, has watched it many, many times, I still think that alien stuff's hard. But I think other than the alien stuff, it's great.
I mean,
well, yeah, like,
I think even with the alien stuff, it's good.
And I'm watching it with the perspective of not really knowing the movie, but I'm nostalgic for the 80s by watching this. Like, even to the point of having the name written in the jacket, name and address written in the jacket, I'm like, oh, that's so 80s.
One of the most surprising things to me about this movie was, so I finished watching it and I had my opinion of it. And then I went to go to Rotten Tomatoes and Google to gather my reviews, which I'll read here in a few moments. And I was just blown away that this movie has like a critics consensus of like 72%. And I'm pretty sure an audience rating of like 66. And there's not a lot of bad said about it. Like I thought, like almost pretty much everybody says what you said. Like, yeah, things get weird. Weird in the second half when they actually meet the aliens, but overall, it seems like I was like a lot of people like this movie. I thought more people were going to be on my side.
Well, see, and like when they do meet the aliens, like it's rushed because somehow they are like warped to where the aliens are, but then it slows down again as they drive, walk through what must be at least half of the budget of the movie's worth of dry ice on the floor as they're going through their little wipeout course. But, you know, like it just becomes this movie where they get separated, but like this ship makes no sense. And like, so it goes from like, they speed it up to get them to the ship. And then it just like the movie grinds to a halt again. And then you meet the alien that does his wacky thing and then it's over.
Yeah,
and for some reason Ben gets the girl. I for some reason
yeah.
Yeah, it is the alien stuff that makes it weird, because just because it was done in a weird I don't know.
It almost would have been funny if there was three alien kids and it was like just they were doing the exact same thing and they just ran into each other. Oh. Thing, like, yeah. So you'd have, like, the counterpoint. Maybe you have, like, the sad alien with the abusive father and the dreamer and the alien and the science-y alien. And it's like...
That actually would have been funny. It would have been, like, a little neat twist on it.
Yeah.
Again, completely unrelated, but this always cracks me up in those types of movies where, like, we see these aliens have these really elongated fingers with, like, suction cups.
Yeah.
But their technology isn't designed to use those implements. Like, they have, like, the little knob that you would turn. Yeah. Like, it should be, like, I don't know, like, that's not how you would design something if you had those, that was your hand. Yeah. That's not what your devices would look like.
Well, see, and when the dad ends up coming in, I started looking at the fact that he's got, like, arms, like, with full hands on his. And so then I start looking at the kid who has, like, little flappy bits. I'm like, are those going to turn into full-on arms?
That's gross. They do. Yeah, I think that's what we're supposed to understand. He has arms, the dad does, but he also has ear arms.
Yeah. Like, it's just, they are a very unusually designed alien, that's for sure. They dreamed up something. But then the daughter, like the female of the species, does not look at all like the other ones. Like, she's got a very different look going on, don't you think? Or, like, am I mistaken? Like,
I agree. Definitely. I mean, obviously you can tell there's a similarity between them, but they don't look like the same thing, but with, like, one has boobs. You know, it's like there's definitely a very clear difference between them. Almost like they seem further away than just brother, sister.
Yeah.
But they are aliens, so maybe it is. Maybe it is a completely different species that just, like, hangs out together.
That's how you know it's a girl when it comes out.
That's right.
It has lips.
Well, and also, like, rouge. Like, makeup.
Or, like, the whole thing. Is that why it took them so long to find the aliens? Because she was busy, like, gussying herself up for the arrival of these humans. Because, I mean, like, I don't know, but Wolfgang's kind of into it when we...
Oh, yeah, he definitely is.
Yeah.
She's really intelligent. Like, that's his whole thing. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's something admirable about that. Like, looks don't matter to him. He just wants a woman with a strong mind.
True.
Yes.
True. Where Ben just wants the hottie who knows nothing about other than she likes Boston cream pie.
Yeah, instead I'm going to get myself floated up to her bedroom so I can just see the inside of her bedroom.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with this amazing technology? I'm going to commit a sexual crime.
Well, that was the very first thing that Darren said. We could look at the girls' locker room, which I also have to question, is there no roof on the girls' locker room? I don't quite get how that was supposed to work.
No, the girls' locker rooms notoriously have skylights.
Oh.
So, yeah. I mean, you were raised in men's locker rooms, so you've probably never seen the inside of one yet.
I've never seen the inside of a girl's locker room outside of TV. Yeah. So
Skylights all the time. It gives them better light when they're doing their makeup and stuff.
Yeah. And pillow fighting in their lingerie.
Pillow fighting. Yes, that's exactly what happens in a girl's locker room. Yeah. And so the other alien, Whack, like... Why does he talk like Bumblebee from Transformers? Why is it like his radio is broken? Is that the only way he does know how to communicate? Because at the end, he is talking in his real voice.
Yeah.
Is it just he has to get over his shyness first, and that's his way of breaking the ice? What's up?
My interpretation is that they got their education of Earth through these radio and TV signals that have just been broadcast into the universe, and they're behind because all of his references are like 50s and 60s, and that's why Darren gives him the Walkman and says, hey, this is 80s music, this is current, this is cool. Okay. They don't have anything, so they're getting the broadcast years and years later.
That's right.
Okay. So part of that is he thinks that is how they communicate. But you've also noticed his sister, I'm assuming it's his sister, is cracking up. Like, she thinks it's hilarious that he's intimidating. What's the word I'm looking for?
Imitating.
Imitating. That's the word. So I think he's doing it because he thinks it's funny. I also think, like, he's like a little kid who's repeating the best bits like we used to do with, like, you know, our favorite comedians.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Hey, what's up, Doc? Yeah. Because, there was a point in this movie, when they get beamed across the galaxy, I'm kind of like, well, so these aliens just brought them here to play hide and seek? Like, they brought them here. Like, isn't that what I'm supposed to assume? And then, like, are they playing with them? Is that, like, we're going to, you know, open these trap doors and make you slide down these slides? Separate you? It's like an intergalactic squid game. You know?
Because it seems like their dad is like a blue collar worker kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I feel like they snuck out of the house. They took like the car. They went on a joyride, and they were like, hey, we want to meet these alien Earth kids. Let's send them the communication device, and then we'll hang out with them. It does seem like it's just like a kid prank, or not even prank, but it is sort of like their little journey themselves. It is weird. I don't think it tracks completely.
Yeah, that's true.
Because are these the same aliens that were trying to communicate to the older guy, or was there a different alien? Because it seems like it's the same aliens. I'm guessing the age thing is like, you know, maybe they're a million years before they turn into adults rather than, you know, 18 or whatever. Yeah, so it's weird. I don't know. Maybe that 3-hour cut would have explained that better.
We can only hope.
Maybe that's the reason why Ben is so disappointed. Is it that was actually Ethan Hawke? He wasn't acting that day. He's like, this is it? Like, we've had this whole movie, and now this is what happens? And so he was just really disappointed.
He was expecting the bigger climax, too, yeah.
Yes, he was expecting better than this. He's like, this costume's not even done yet.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's just me, but I think Dad's mouth kind of looked like a green vagina. There was something off with that design that I could have done without the sideways mouth. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe it was like a Star Trek sort of like homage, you know, the green aliens that you want to bang.
Right. Well, we do have two Star Trek people in this movie. I mean,
true.
Robert Picardo and James Cromwell. So
there's also a very sort of cheeky reference to the green alien with three navels, which I think is a very clear homage to Star Trek having to give their green alien two navels because they showed like a promiscuous version, and that was a way to make them not human. They gave the woman an extra navel so that they could get away with showing so much of her skin. Huh. I'm pretty sure that's a pretty famous Star Trek that I'm obviously not super aware of because I'm talking in vagaries, but I think that's a thing.
That's one I was not aware of, though. That's a piece of Star Trek lore I know nothing about, yeah.
And it could be completely wrong, so hey.
See? We deal in falsities on this show.
That's right. We'll just make shit up. Who knows? Email the show, SmallvilleFanCast at Gmail. I mean, whatever. Yeah. Let us know.
No. SmallvilleFanCast at
Gmail. Yeah. Email me about this show there, and I'll tell these guys about it.
That's right. Yeah. Insert the middleman. That's what we want to do here. We don't believe in cutting out the middleman. We want to insert the middleman. So, yeah, when they go home, like you say, they give out some stuff for the aliens to keep, and Darren keeps his dad's present, which is another one of those things. It's kind of subtle, but it's like, okay, no, he chooses to keep his dad's thing. And but Meek, meanwhile, automatically decides to eat the harmonica.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another one of those moments where I'm like, I think I've seen this movie, but I don't know. Yeah.
So forgive me. I want to take a quick step back. I did some Googling. So apparently it was a thing in Star Trek. They were not allowed to show a single belly button. You like the censors would not allow you to show a woman's belly button on TV.
Yeah.
They got around it by giving her an extra belly button. So she had two of them.
Okay.
And that somehow was able to get through the censor. So that was the reference I think they were making to the three navels.
You said single.
Side by side or up and down?
Top and bottom. Yeah. Top and bottom. Okay. Yeah. Top. Yeah. So it's kind of like looks like a snowman or a figure eight was her belly buttons or her navels. They were both innies.
Yeah.
Okay. My apologies. I wanted to correct that. I push up my glasses.
There you go.
All right. I don't get the eating of the harmonica. Actually.
You don't get eating the harmonica. Yeah. No. Yeah.
That one. Yeah. That one I don't get.
Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't hand the harmonica over and say, you know, blow into it first and say, see, this is what it does. And then hand it to her.
Where's
course, she was the smart one.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah. This alien species isn't going to last long. So they get home. Why does the force field give out when they come home? Did they just run out of power? Is it ever explained? Because if it was, I missed it.
I don't think it was explained. Okay. I think they just needed a reason for the ship to not be functional, and it worked that way. There might have been some reason about how the kids got taken away, so they weren't communicating, because the whole zipping through time and space wasn't the computer program itself. I think the aliens, like, submitted that to them in some way, like they took over and reprogrammed a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think that might have something to do with it. Because again, when we get to the very end, there's like a new program or a new circuit board or a more complete circuit board. So maybe the element of being able to, you know, go through intergalactic travel is something they'll be able to do on their own now.
Yeah, it really felt like they were trying to set up a sequel that, you know, $9.6 million just wouldn't get them.
No.
Yeah.
No, no. You're not going to get there. Yeah. On that, unfortunately.
Yeah, because it really was, yeah, this optimistic, hey, now what are they going to do? Maybe Explorers would have made more sense if it was a series.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But I also think it's kind of common. Like, you want to always set up the possibility of a sequel, even though I doubt there was a sequel in the works. But had it done, like, you know, $300 million, we would have had Explorers 2 back, to, you know, to the Wild West or whatever.
That's
I think
right.
That definitely would have happened.
That's right. because roads where we're going, we don't need roads.
That's right.
I mean, the orb is kind of TARDIS like. They could have had a whole like time travel situation going on.
Yep.
Well, yeah, like the warping to and from the mm-hmm. ship, the big yellow streak. I mean, I don't know how much distance they covered. I don't think the aliens are like zipping around in our own backyard.
Right, because there's that kind of scene where Ben assumes that they've come to Earth over the millennia, and they're like, no, we've never been there because you people are a-holes.
Yeah.
But really, like, they're 20 years behind getting the radio waves. Radio waves have been going out for, what, 100 years at that point?
Yeah.
So, I mean, probably they've never been there because Earth is like a shithole. So why would you go there? You know, I'm assuming you have that type of technology, that backwards planet like that, unless you're a predator and you're hunting people for sport. I don't get the reason why you'd want to go there. But yeah, it seems weird. Because I expected like the dad's spaceship to also zoom off like that, as if to show that's like how fast their spaceships travel, but they don't. Again, maybe that 3-hour cut explained that better.
Yeah, maybe.
But I don't think it's important, really. I mean, it is like a but I think the overall story, it doesn't. I don't think that explanation is going to change anybody's mind over the how good or bad the movie is.
I also don't understand the moment when they do get back to Earth and they crash land into the lake and their ship sinks. Why Lori has come out to them and then like doesn't even stay to talk to Ben?
Yeah, again, that like, makes no sense. Yeah. Why did she wake up? Why did she have this connection?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
It's also she can slip him a note in class so that they can kiss for the first time in a dream.
Right.
With this bewildering romantic through line that's happening for some reason. The girl part makes no sense unless they had made her part of the squad. If she had been in on it throughout the movie... But otherwise, it's like, no, you're committing some crimes here, young man.
I mean, I think in a way it makes a little bit of sense that if the aliens had realized that he had a crush on her, so they included him in her in the dream. But then that kind of goes against the idea that they're just broadcasting to whoever can get it, and that Ben was not chosen specifically, and that makes it seem like he was chosen, but that doesn't really make sense when you add in the old dude.
Yeah.
But then it makes sense for her to be part of the dream later, but not be there waking up when the ship crashed. Like, that seems to be completely separate, but in some way connected.
Yeah
I don't think it makes sense.
I mean, with what Colin was saying earlier about movies being so much faster these days, maybe this movie would have benefited from them having zipped up there a couple of times to see these aliens instead of this one trip, right? It's like, oh, they get to know them a couple of times. I don't know. Maybe there should have been a couple more back and forths.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
The only thing I would mention is at the very end, when they're flying away Superman style, I'm almost positive that is just Ethan Hawke being silly, because he does like the Superman pose, and I just feel like that was Ethan Hawke just like, hey, I'm flying like Superman, and they just left it in for some reason, because it does not feel to be in character at all. Other than it does feel like a kid who's around 12, 14, 15 years old knowing that they are filming a flying scene through the air like Superman.
I wouldn't doubt that. I mean, especially in 1985, it wouldn't have been too far off from a young man's memory at that time. Yeah. Well, there we go. That is Explorers. Well, now, Colin, Michael, on IMDb, it scored 6.4 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 58. And now here's the ones Colin was talking about. On Rotten Tomatoes, 72% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 66%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a spaceship crashing in a lake. Hit us with some reviews. Oh, is that the best I had? Like it's Marvel shooting through books? Like it's Marvel shooting through books. I don't know.
Morton Green Hermanson gave the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "This movie single-handedly pointed me in the direction of working with computers and electronics. So this movie has a very special place in my heart. I cannot watch this without being very touched off into tears. Adventure, work, dedication, passion, love, and dreams. Everything that makes who I am today. It took me almost 40 years, but then I really understood the helicopter pilot. I have not had these dreams since I was a kid. As a kid, his was just scary, but misunderstood as he envied the boys. Now that I am an adult, the last part with the aliens is seen with a little bit of ambivalence as the morals they try to learn the boys are very important. There's just a little too much of music pranks and other things that make it a bit strange to watch as an adult, but the first part is just so good."
Correct. You are correct, Herman.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a disjointed moment in there. was Herman drinking that night and doing voice to text and just kind of at one point just started?
He only learned our language through radio signals in space. Oh, okay. So that's why.
That's why.
Robert DM gives the movie 2 out of 5 stars and says, "This movie is good until they meet the aliens. It started strong, and it feels like you're watching an 80s Spielberg movie, but something went wrong in the middle of the movie. Probably the director lost interest or inspiration. Once the kids boarded the alien spaceship, the story went downhill. It doesn't help that the aliens remind you of the Teletubbies."
Also correct.
Oh, my God. They do now.
Thomas B. gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, "This is actually a 2-star movie, but I'm obliged to give it a bonus for personal nostalgic value. Kids build spaceship out of an amusement park ride and fly into outer space. Great first half, but once leaving planet Earth, the film deteriorates into awful slapstick comedy with ridiculous alien costume designs, the most annoying voiceovers of time, and an ending so childish that it managed to disappoint me as a preschooler." Career starter for both Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix, so reckon a solid 80s children adventure for the first half.
So the only thing I would say is I don't know for sure, but I think it's more like 2/3. I feel like the alien stuff is only like 30 minutes of the movie. It's like a good 2.5 hours, I think, roughly. But I think the aliens is only like 1/3 of it.
Yeah, it feels like a lot longer.
And then the last one is from an unnamed Rotten Tomatoes reviewer who gives it 2.5 out of 5 stars and says, "This could have been a modern classic had Joe Dante not felt obligated to put on his usual puppet show shtick. Unfortunately, what starts out as a wondrous kids on an adventure to enter outer space turns into flat eye candy to babysit." I have some dust on my screen. Sorry, "what starts out as wondrous kids on an adventure to enter outer space turns into a flat eye candy to babysit the VHS generation. It did not become the next E.T. as it had set out to do, and just as it incites inspiration, it becomes a humorless mess. I love the idea of shared dreams coming from alien civilizations. That should obviously make a great film, but it gives up after that." There you go.
Right on. Yeah, so mid-60s-ish. Yeah, that's kind of the average of everything here, mid-60s. Yeah, this is one that, watching this movie, I just can't state enough how it feels nostalgic to me, even though I don't remember the movie itself. And I do definitely appreciate that about this, because I do get the Goonies vibe, the Gremlins vibe, the all those 80s, you know, little ensemble kid groups from the 80s movies that we have. So I get the vibe. It's, it doesn't hold up the same way the Goonies did.
No, that's
for sure. And, you know, I'm glad to have watched it because, like I said, I have flashes of I remember this movie. And so it's nice to actually have context for the pieces that were obviously lost somewhere deep in my brain at one point that, you know, okay, yeah, I have context for this movie. I know what it is. I'm glad to have watched it, but, I don't know if I'll ever watch it again. But thank you for bringing it to us, Michael, because, well, you know,
thank you for indulging me.
Yeah, because, like, I enjoyed the vibe of it, but there were things to love about this movie, but it fell flat. And we've gone on ad nauseum about, you know, just where exactly it did go flat. But still,
I would just suggest anyone who does want to watch, maybe for the first time after listening, you know the alien stuff is coming. Just pay attention to that first half or first two quarters. You know, the acting and the writing, the directing, it's all great. It's all building towards something. Unfortunately, then they slide in this other thing that I don't think it was really building to. Maybe it was hastily because of the timing, whatever. But I do really think up until they go to the aliens, I can't overstate how good that movie is. And I think if they've been able to land it, if that third act had hit as solidly as the first two acts build up to, I do think we would be talking about this in the same breath with Goonies and E.T. and those types of movies. I think that it starts off on equal footing and it just loses its way. Yeah.
The last third of the script was just every page was a shoulder shrug emoji.
It's like something, aliens? Something aliens.
Yeah. We don't even have to write half their dialogue because they're just going to say stuff from movies.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically the same thing as Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. It's like first two thirds and then I guess aliens.
That's right.
Bring it back. It's callback, folks.
Now I have to leave that whole part in.
Oh. Or not.
Because it pays
off. If you'd like to get that part, become a patron of I used to like this one, for exclusive behind the scenes and bonus footage.
Oh, wow. Yes, that's right. We'll have Michael is our program director for what we do over on Patreon, because I haven't come up with anything yet. So, okay. Well, Colin, bring us home. Your first viewing of Explorers, you came in most grumpy about it by comparing this to some sort of Guantanamo Bay torture. You know, now that we've talked it out with you, you know, come on, look at our track record. Clue, you weren't a big fan of. Ready to Rumble, we weren't a big fan of. You know, but we've had.
I think we're just trading off. I don't know that it's possible at this point for Michael and I to find a movie where we just land on. But you know, I guess what I'll say about this movie is, I'm okay to admit that I'm the problem and this movie is not the problem.
Hi, it's me. I'm the problem.
It's me. Yeah.
It's not you. It's me.
Yeah. I am the problem. I just lack any real 80s nostalgia because I was born, you know, late 80s. And I don't know. These movies just, they never really, like, resonate with me the way that I see in, like, you guys.
Yeah.
Like, when you watch them when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And, I agree. Like, the more, I was kind of, like, ready to just throw out the entire movie, but the more that we've talked about it, I do agree with, and I was, like, super glad to hear you say that stuff about the latter part of the movie, because that was the point where I texted Sean, and I was like,
I was like, this is,
I can't do this movie. Yeah. But I will concede that up until that point, it is a decent movie. I think part of me wishes, like, and like we said, there's more, I think there's more potential here than we get to actually see, but I would have loved to see more, even like delving into Darren's home life and like even building the relationship between Darren and Ben and that kind of stuff. And I almost wish they wouldn't have even made it to space. I wish they would have spent the entire movie trying to just figure it out, and then, like, maybe had the aliens at the very end, like, come to Earth and meet them and be like, oh, hey, it was us the whole time. Like, we were the ones who were trying to, and you're just missing these key things or whatever, and then gone on their weird dream flight that could, it just reminded me of Peter Pan so much. I don't know why, but.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyways, yeah. I've softened a bit.
You've softened,
you know, from how I came in. My heart grew at least one size.
Yeah, but you're not ever going to watch it again.
But I'm never ever going to watch this movie again. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So that part of your original text message still applies. You're...
Yes.
Okay. Right on.
Well, maybe not. I guess it doesn't apply if given the option of being waterboarded or watching this movie. I would concede to watch this movie.
Yeah, I do think it's better than that.
Yeah. Okay.
So I will say, Colin, if you would like, again, if you just, you know, deign to have me back on at some point in time, just send me a list of, like, your 10 favorite movies that you've never done, and I'll find one of them that I like, if not love. And then maybe we can just have a love fest. Maybe we'll gang up on Sean. We'll pick one he doesn't like, and we'll make fun of him for an hour.
I have a few that I could probably send your way that I have some deep cuts.
But again, I want it to be someone that I want me and Colin to be on the same page.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to think. What about the Page Master?
Page.
Never seen it.
Jeez. Okay. Well, yeah. I feel like you would like that movie.
Macaulay
if you
Culkin,
like,
yeah.
If you like fantasy and like RPG type stuff,
I do. Yeah. I do love those things.
Well, there we go. That's the Explorers, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. Huge, big thank you to our special guest, Michael Ross. Michael, I seem to recall something about a book and other things that you do. I don't know. I think plug your shit.
I have so many things that I do. I will just a couple. I'll mention the Smallville podcast that both Colin and Sean have joined on multiple times and always welcome back. It's called Farm to Fable. It's a complete Smallville TV show rewatch podcast. We just wrapped season 5. We're going to be kicking off season 6 coverage here in the next couple months. We take a deep dive through every single episode. We highlight the things that we love, and there's a lot, but we also call out the things that are not great, and there are also plenty of those as well. I recently started a new podcast as part of a work project. It's called Healthy Minds Alliance. And this is a mental health awareness and education podcast. It's short form interviews with volunteers who work in their communities to promote and educate around mental health. So it's like a 20-minute tops interview with people who are just volunteering and doing some hard work in local communities to make a difference. I'm very proud of it. It's no one's listening yet because it's not flashy. So if you have any interest at all in mental health awareness, or just trying to be supportive of that, please check out Healthy Minds Alliance podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And then what we kind of alluded to, I just recently finished a Kickstarter for a role-playing game that I wrote called Action 12 Cinema. It's basically improv in D12s, loosely filtered through a three-act structure. It's all about playing through bad but fun action movies. Almost, again, the Starkiller movie that is highlighted in this movie is a great example of the type of movie that you would play through in that game. The Kickstarter ended successfully. I'm finishing the writing. Should be, I don't know when this is going to come out, but hopefully by the time it comes out, the writing will be done or really close to it. It's got to go through some like editing and layout and stuff, but the game exists. You can play it now. You can pre-order it after the Kickstarter on my website, which is therpgacademy.com. And you can, of course, find me on Twitter at therpgacademy. Hopefully that wasn't too much stuff. I do too much.
Yeah, it will be in the show notes, everything that you mentioned. Yeah, because that's the thing. If you look up Michael, like, he didn't even talk about the fact that he runs a gaming convention in Dayton, Ohio every November. He didn't mention like some of the other stuff that he's been working on. If you follow him, yeah, we'll get you his handle. Yeah, it's in the show notes. It'll be in the show notes.
I appreciate that, sir.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just tell your friends or share our posts or, you know, like and subscribe and download and all that sort of thing, or go to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. Give us 5 stars and a review. It doesn't matter what you say in those reviews. You could say, hey, we didn't like it until the last 2/3. That's all you have to say.
Yeah.
You know, last 1/3.
It started great, but when the aliens showed up, fucked us.
Yeah, that's right. Or if you want to go one step further above and beyond, we've talked about things like Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/I used to like this one. Become a Patreon subscriber to our show, and you become an executive producer, and you get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com, for links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. And drop us a line at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like. And then maybe you can find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.
Yay!
Yay!
Alrighty.